Hello, and welcome to a special Christmas edition of the Screamcast, a slasher podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Olga, and today we're discussing the 1974 classic.
Classic.
Black Christmas.
Ooh.
Stop it.
All right, so before we really get into the nitty-gritty spoilery stuff, we're going to spend the first couple minutes just sort of... If you guys haven't seen Black Christmas, I'm going to give you a little pitch here, let you know, why we decided to talk about it and why we think it's worth checking out. And then we're going to spoiler territory. And if you haven't seen it, you should stop and, watch the cool movie.
And then come back and listen to us talk about it. And then you'd know what we're talking about.
So a little backstory here for me. I was a film student. I think I've said that before on this podcast. And I did a lot of horror movie stuff and read a lot about horror movies and stuff while as a film student at college. And my senior year of college there, I won the Film Production Award. And all the film awards came with a Blu-ray that the film department, heads gave the recipients. And what they gave me was Black Christmas. And I had never seen it at this point, but they were like, oh, we really think you'll like it. It's one of, if not the first big slasher film ever. It predates Halloween. You know, it's a very important film for the beginning of the slasher genre. So I was like, oh, this is cool. So I checked it out, and this is only the second time I've seen it now, watching with Olga. This is Olga's first time.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I've been talking a lot. Why don't you say a little bit about why I think people... Do you agree that people should watch this?
I definitely agree. Okay. I mean, a lot of people, those who have been listening to the podcast since my premiere on the finale of Scream, the TV series, and those who listen to Scream Queens and even just, us reviewing Scream... These were all kind of my first experiences with slasher movies. I've never been into horror in any sense, really, until I met Dan. And this is important to him and interesting to him. So I was like, I'm going to give this a shot. This is interesting.
Because she's a good girlfriend.
I am. I'll say it. I am. And, I was jokingly like, I'm only doing this because you want to. But, I was into it. I was definitely into it.
Black Christmas specifically?
Yeah, specifically Black Christmas I'm referring to now. But I can see how people would think, oh, it's not for me, it's not for me. It's really just something that is really interesting to see what influence or potential, patterns you can see forming.
Yeah.
What? Out of this movie.
Yeah. Because it was one of the first of its kind, and you can see which things... went on to be a bunch of other things and which things were sort of left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely interesting. I also think that this one is a lot more serious than a lot of the ones that we've, a lot of things we've talked about. It's a straight up slasher, but not in a goofy, campy way. This is a much more artistic film than slashers became, what they became known for in the 80s and stuff like that. This is a pretty it's not like a high art film with great characters or anything, but it's the cinematography is strong.
The cinematography was astounding, honestly.
Yeah.
There were really breathtaking moments in both just very interesting ways and scary ways.
I totally agree. And that's the other thing I was going to say is I think this is probably the scariest thing that we've talked about.
Yeah.
It was straight up frightening. And I don't think you were like, oh, why are you making me watch this? Which you weren't never saying during Scream or anything like that.
No, yeah. I would be sometimes, during the Scream movies, I'd be like, all right, this is ridiculous. This is, the Scream movies kind of lent themselves more to being
comedy.
Mocked. And because there was so much subversion going on there. And I was like, oh, of course they're playing and supposed to be this way, blah, blah, blah. But this one was just straight up this part is just genuinely unpleasant, but I'm enjoying how unpleasant it is.
And I guess we should maybe just say that the basic premise is sorority house around Christmas time, a killer is sort of stalking everybody, calling them, leaving obscene phone calls, and slowly killing them off. But there's a lot of different little twists and side things here, and it's a much more ambiguous and artful film than you would expect. So if you haven't seen it, go find a copy. It's if you want something a little bit different for your Christmas movies, this is our Christmas recommendation, I suppose.
I mean, if I had to choose between this and Elf for the 100th time, I think I would still choose Elf. But for, you know, it takes, I have to be in a special mood for this kind of thing. And I was in the mood for it today. Right, so I'm glad,
Yeah.
That dark, twisted side of me. And unlike Scream 3, I did not fall asleep.
I have to say, I've never seen Elf.
Damn!
That's one of the only big Christmas movies I've never seen.
Oh my gosh.
I've never been a big Will Ferrell guy. I'll give it a shot, though.
I mean, it's definitely a Will Ferrell movie, yeah. But it's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So. It's the ultimate new Christmas classic. And new, saying it came out in like 2004 or something.
Yeah.
Maybe you were too old for it when it came out.
Maybe. Well, so look out for our Elf cast coming next week.
Would be funny. Right.
So I guess before we really get into spoilers, I just want to also say that this movie is directed by Bob Clark. I should say the late Bob Clark, I suppose.
Found out today.
Yeah, and he actually, very funnily enough, also directed A Christmas Story, the movie with Ralphie that you always see around these times of year, with Don't Kick Your Eye Out, all that stuff.
The kid who gets his tongue stuck to a pole. Yep.
Very different kind of Christmas movie, so that's a very funny thing that this guy did both.
Yeah. This one predates that one.
Yeah. All right.
He didn't go from children to murdering sorority girls, let's put it that way.
All right, so getting into the spoilers, you know, leave now or forever hold your peace.
Thank you for sticking with us for the first 6 minutes or 5 minutes or however long we've been doing this.
Yeah.
See you after you've seen it. Now for everybody else.
All right, so I guess with spoilers included, what are your general thoughts here? Like,
towards the end of it, I was definitely getting the feeling that we wouldn't know who the killer was, that we weren't going to get a satisfactory, like, this is the definitive killer with their motivation.
Yeah,
and
here's
their
backstory.
Yeah, this is what he's talking about, Billy, Angie, or whatever her name is. So I kind of got that vibe, and as we were getting closer to that, I started getting more and more annoyed about it. Until it was the actual end, and then I was like, actually, I'm happy with this.
Yeah.
Because it being one of the first big films of its time with this, there is no expectation really set up of having...
Yeah. It, unlike Scream Queens, it had sort of this sort of different, ambiguous ending while still having a climax, I think.
Yeah, it definitely
still
had the climax.
She still had that her big final girl-ish type moment, and she still, you know...
I mean, I know that this is your second time watching it, but you didn't really remember the ending, you said.
Yeah.
Did you expect Jess to be the final girl?
Throughout the movie?
Yeah.
I mean, after the first 10 minutes,
Hmm.
Just because she was clearly the protagonist. I mean, the thing is, there's no such thing as a final girl. And at this point in time, really.
That's true.
You know, that trope isn't a thing. I guess she technically is the final girl, you know, they're all about dead. So in that way she is, but she definitely doesn't fit a lot of the tropes. She's not a virgin.
She's pregnant. Yeah. She's gonna, I mean, I was pretty shocked that they were talking, like, she was like, I'm getting an abortion.
Yeah.
I haven't achieved the things I wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
This is a movie in the 70s, you know.
Let's get back to that. I agree. She isn't the final girl in the traditional way, and I want to talk more about the ending and about the lack of resolution, and because it is a weird mix where I agree, I do feel a little bit unfulfilled or anticlimactic, not really getting anything out of that. Since I kind of appreciate the ambiguity and the art and then lack of, you don't need to over-explain things. It makes it so it's a movie where you want to go back and listen to what was said before and piece together it yourself and go like, oh, do we think that he killed the little girl from earlier? Like, is that connected or is it completely separate? And, like, does it have to do with his sister? Or, like, you know, like...
Yeah.
What... In some ways, yes, it's anticlimactic. In other ways, it's what makes the movie more of an actual movie.
I agree. I think in terms of pacing, I was more satisfied that they didn't... that they let it stand in this way.
Yeah.
Than try to rush something else or get something else out of it. It definitely had its arc and... we did have that mystery up until the end of whether or not it was the boyfriend.
Yeah,
And even though we didn't technically witness the face-off, there was this just tension of the police and the house and what are we looking at and this and the very end. I mean, it was eerie.
Yeah.
It was chilling. It was eerie. And I was fully enthralled by it.
Yeah.
So I really have no complaints because that's what I want out of an ending.
Yeah.
It's satisfying in that sense.
Yeah, I agree. I actually, you mentioned the word pacing, and I think that's an interesting thing to talk about with this movie, because it's really interesting. Like, I think the number one thing I see when I watch this compared to other slashers is how slow. Like, it's an only, like, an hour and 40-minute movie, and it feels long, mm-hmm. and it feels drawn out. But at the same time, it's not like there isn't a lot of deaths. There's a lot of big deaths. They kind of keep them pretty steadily. And so, I don't know, like, in some ways, I really appreciate the slower pace and the more, like, just human moments or whatever, even though the characters aren't, like, super complex or anything. Mm. But I appreciate sort of the taking its time. On the other hand, it does get a little boring.
I mean, if I'm trying to think about, like, where they could have cut the fat,
yeah,
I'm having trouble coming up with
yeah
things that they could have cut that would have taken, I think, cutting it down anymore for the sake of speed,
yeah,
or adding things in for the sake of
fluff,
melodrama, like, yeah. That's the thing, it wasn't melodramatic,
yeah,
which I appreciate, because I'm used to melodrama.
Yeah.
In this. I'm used to just cheese. This wasn't cheesy. It was genuine.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of that just came from, it was down to earth. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, it really, like, as crazy as the killer was, the people and their interactions were down to earth.
I mean, there was, like, funny, goofy yeah. stuff, too, yeah. but that was necessary. It was to yeah. break up the tension.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'm fine with, yeah.
Certainly.
It's necessary as well. Yeah. It's just a different kind of tension breaking.
Yeah. Well, also, one thing I really wanted to talk about was the cinematography here, because I think that it's pretty fantastic. Not just the cinematography, but also just the set design and the fact that we're so much in this one house, mm-hmm. and that it's a beautiful house, and that how they film it and the lighting that's being used, I think, was all really great and really pulled you into it.
Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of your house.
Really?
Yeah, like some of the wood paneling.
Yeah, I can see that. I could see that.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, I have a very old house I live in.
I live in an apartment building, so.
Yeah,
Slashers never take place in apartment buildings. There's nowhere to hide. Yeah.
It's true. Mm. Unless it's like an abandoned full building and you can go from apartment to apartment.
No. Even in my apartment buildings, there's like 6 apartments, yeah. so. No. You're going to run out of places real soon. And there's no roof access, so you're doomed.
Oh, man. Yeah, but I was really happy with some of the lighting. I think there's a lot of really creepy cinematography. I think the thing that I most need to talk about, though, is the point of view shots, which were very clearly inspiration for Halloween.
Yeah.
Which starts at the very similar beginning with point of view following the killer. What did you think about that whole opening, sort of following him and his breathing?
Oh, I mean, I didn't enjoy it. So that's the thing. I liked it.
Yeah.
And that it got me hooked yeah. immediately.
Yeah.
I wanted to know what happens.
Mm.
But it wasn't pleasant listening to his breathing. Yeah. But I was very interested. Like, my eye was following everything. I was scanning the screen. Like, what's going to happen? What's he going to use? What's going to
yeah.
be of interest to this maniac.
Yeah. Well, the point of view shot idea is very interesting in that it has a lot of pros in that, like, you're putting your audience in their headspace, you're making them feel uncomfortable mm-hmm. being in their headspace. At the same time, it's interesting because you could say it makes it less scary because you know where the killer is. You know, like, you're not like, where is he? Is he over here? Is he over there? You know what the killer's doing, and you're so, like, it's an interesting back and forth right. there, because, like, when you cut, when they show his point of view and then they cut to inside the house, you're like, well, I know he's not there yet, he's not gonna attack them yet, uh-huh. but it builds that suspension.
It does, especially since as the movie goes on and we're spending more time with the girls, yeah. less time with the killer, we don't know where the killer is.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's great. And I actually, speaking about Halloween, we were watching the special features of the Blu-ray with Bob Clark, the director, and he was talking about how he worked with John Carpenter, director of Halloween, and had sort of been wanting to, at one point, to be doing a sequel to this called Halloween, set at Halloween, like very similar stuff. And he was very happy with John Carpenter's film.
He didn't feel like his idea was stolen yeah, or anything.
But I just think it's really interesting that Halloween is so iconic and so important and created a whole genre and a whole, you know, big boom of movies. And it was so inspired by this movie that so mm-hmm. few people know.
Yeah.
You know? Also, if you point out, this is a Canadian movie,
too. Oh, yeah. yeah. So some of the accents...
Yeah.
We're yeah. fun. And it was cold and wintry. There was something else that I wanted to say in regards to cinematography, is that it really focused in on highlighting people's eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that freaked you out.
It freaked me out. Well, it freaked me out a couple of times because that just has inherent intensity to it.
Yeah.
Like, just the panic in people's eyes or the mania or the just even in the faces as they are kind of like anxious or or laughing or sad. Like, people's eyes are kind of an ongoing, not theme, but.
Like highlighted
there. Yeah, like it's a little thread that carries you through where it really, again, what you said, like it puts you in the headspace of the killer when we see it from his point of view.
Yeah.
It puts us in the headspace of the victims, of the sorority girls, of the cops, of the killer from a different side of things when we see their eyes. Yeah. And the lighting and how it's played into that, it was one of the, honestly, one of the more interesting things of this movie.
Definitely, I want to talk a little bit about the phone calls themselves. And so we also had done a little bit of reading in here and know that a lot of the inspiration for this movie is this urban legend about babysitters who, you know, they would get calls being like, check the children. And then they'd find out the calls are from inside the house.
So, I mean, and I don't know about you, but from my childhood, I remember this like tropey line of like, the call is coming from inside the house. And I knew it was from like a horror movie about a babysitter, but that's all I knew.
Yeah.
About it, and then watching this, and it appears here. I was really surprised.
I think this is one of the earlier uses of it, especially the urban legend from what we read from the 60s, so it's not that much predating this.
Mm-hmm.
I think When a Stranger Calls is probably the main thing that people are thinking of, but it is interesting to see this as one of the earlier uses of it. Also, to me, I can't help but think about how this potentially evolved into Scream, and the phone calls on Scream, and how it's... It's interesting because I think that the phone call stuff here is so frightening. And I also think that the opening phone call is by far the most frightening, most disturbing.
I agree. I mean, it's promising, like, sexual violence.
Yeah, yeah.
That's disturbing to the extreme. It's not just disturbing for women, but it's disturbing for men to hear as well. Because that's something, I would argue, it's a thing of, like, unfamiliarity.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the only, you know, I'm not saying that's the only aspect of, like, this is uncomfortable because it's unfamiliar, but that could potentially be one, and from a woman's aspect, it's the threat of assault and how that's kind of a an ongoing concern for women in a lot of places.
Speaking of which, they actually throw out the word rape in this movie, which, you know, we'll get into more with abortion and stuff, but just the fact that they're so casual about talking about these important topics, which might be a little bit too much these days, you know, so many years later. You know, I think that that's interesting. I thought that that opening phone call was incredibly unnerving. I think that they continue to be unnerving throughout, but they maybe lose their edge a little bit the more, you know, the more familiar you get with it.
Right. I might have, like, I spent a lot more time focusing in on, like, trying to pull clues than just trying to listen.
Well, it's also interesting, the first phone call feels very different from the other ones because it is much more just, like, a sexual thing. He's not talking, he's not referencing those names. He's not really hinting at a backstory.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I definitely think it's interesting in how it potentially connects with Scream and, you know, led to this whole ongoing thing here.
It was disturbing. Yes. There's no other word for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely disturbing. Let's talk about the cops in this movie.
A+.
Yeah. So we have our lieutenant at the top. We do have our crappy cop who's not good, but he's pointed out as being not the good cop, and he's yelled at by his boss for being not a good cop.
Yes, several times.
And so this is a great example of the original doing it right and subsequent movies and generations twisting it and doing it wrong. You know, we've complained so much on Scream Queens and things about why do we have idiot cops? You know, the killer's not as interesting if the cops are idiots. You know, it's not as intriguing if the cops are idiots, but here we have a cop who comes in, he puts a guy outside right away, he yells at his inferiors for messing up, he taps the phone lines, you know, he
investigates multiple angles, and he has his theories, and he turns out to be wrong in the end. You know, there's the incompetence of not searching the attic, but
he's not perfect, but
it's not outright incompetence.
He seems like I can believe him as a police officer, whereas, like, I can't believe Dewey exists in real in the real world.
Yeah.
And I definitely can't believe the Scream Queens guys exist in the real world. Mm-hmm. And so when this guy screws up, you're like, oh, it's because he's a human, as opposed to, oh, he's a badly written character.
Right. You know, like, he was still doing his job. Yeah.
So I definitely think that's a great aspect of this movie that I felt refreshing to me when I watched it the first time.
I mean, especially since Jess did attack and kill Peter. Like, it's like, oh, he was trying to kill her, so she saw. Yeah. And she was unconscious. She couldn't tell them otherwise.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, all evidence indicates, yes, he was a killer. So it makes sense that that was a conclusion they came to.
Yeah. And it's interesting.
No fault of their own, I would argue.
A similar thing that I think is really great about this movie compared to other movies is how, you know how we always go, like, oh, you know, they know there's, like, six people killed at this point. Like, wow, they go to the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this movie does a great job of, A, taking place over basically, like, 24 hours, 2 days, mm-hmm. whatever. And they don't know that most of the people die.
Mm-hmm.
So it's believable they're not going to the FBI. There's no question there. Because as far as they know, a little girl died, and people are reacting to that, mm-hmm. believably.
Yes.
And one other person is missing.
Yes.
And they don't know about the rest of the people.
Yeah, they think that Mrs. Mack is at her sister's.
Yeah.
They don't know she's dead.
Yeah.
They only have evidence of little girl, two sorority girls,
yeah.
missing person,
yeah.
and girl who was attacked who is unconscious yeah. now. And
I think that really helps the movie, and it also shows how much cell phones have changed things and how,
mm-hmm.
you know, how much harder horror can be with cell phones in
yeah.
the mix.
Yeah. There's not this attachment. Like, the character had to be standing there.
Yeah.
Next to her phone, next to this house phone,
yeah.
for a certain amount of time while they could track where the call is coming from.
Yeah.
That, I mean, honestly, that was one of my favorite moments, as, like, frustrating as it was, of where she's, like, at the door screaming
yeah.
for the girls upstairs, just the desperation
yeah.
on her face. It was tense. It was
great stuff.
Like, I was wound tight.
Yeah. Was your skin crawling?
Oh, God. That's a dumb tagline that makes it think.
Well, so explain this.
Well, on Dan's Blu-ray case, it says,
if your skin isn't crawling,
it's on too tight. Like, that makes it sound like it's, you know, horror porn, or whatever it's called.
Torture porn.
Like, oh, someone's gonna come and peel their skin off or some shit, and...
Oh, man.
I don't do that. Like, that's something where yeah. I draw the line.
I mean, I don't like torture porn yeah. either. Not a fan.
No.
Let's go into maybe, so Jess is the main character, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go into her a little bit more. Let's talk about both the things we liked and the things we didn't like. Starting with what we didn't like, maybe.
Her voice.
Yeah, her voice. Do you want to do some impressions for us?
I was doing it because I was listening to her. It was just like, hello. Hello, Bob, Peter, girls, Claude. Like, it was just this, like, everything is a question. Breathy question.
Yeah.
Hello. Like, we heard her say hello probably 1,000 times in this
yes.
movie.
Yes, between the people saying hello and the people saying Claude.
Claude was the frickin' cat.
Yeah, like, oh my God.
Fuck you white furry piece of shit.
Was like, he white?
Yes.
Okay. yeah, I mean, we're not a super big fan of that performance. I feel okay saying that. It's 40 years ago. yeah, we're not a super big fan of the main actress performance overall. There are good moments.
Yeah, no, I just said when yeah. she's standing at the door, that was
yeah.
great.
She's
not a bad actress. It
yeah.
was just kind of weird.
And some of her dialogue, yeah, like, especially the repetition, it's, like, a little bit too much for
mm-hmm.
me, and it makes it harder for me to care about her.
Yeah.
On the flip side, the abortion storyline really makes me invested in her.
Her being pregnant,
yeah.
not wanting, yeah, her boyfriend, who's like, but I love you, let's get married, and she's just like, no, I have my ambitions. I don't
yeah.
love you. I don't want to marry you. Why should I have this baby? I don't want it.
And like, that was all, yeah, like you said, so shocking to me watching this movie from 40 years ago and going, I can't, like, it would be surprising to me if I saw this now. And
mm-hmm.
that's crazy.
That's messed up.
Yeah, that's so messed up. But, like, I mean, yes, it is sort of like classic feminism, like, I have my dreams, whatever. And obviously that is from an older time, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, yeah, the fact that she's so up for having this abortion, that she isn't going to let this guy control her, that she doesn't love
yeah.
him, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was all really a really strong part of the movie, and it led to two things that I want to talk about.
Oh, God. first one is going to be the ridiculous one, right?
I think both of them are ridiculous. Oh, you haven't heard the second one.
Oh, damn. Okay.
All right, so the first ridiculous one was that halfway through watching the movie the first time.
First time. Emphasis
yeah,
first
the
time.
First time, I was like, okay, so he has this baby, he's gonna abort it, it's such a big thing, and then we keep hearing about, like, this child who was attacked, and help me, and why did you do this to me?
Over the phone,
and Billy, like, who's Billy? And I was like, clearly the killer is her unborn child she aborts, and then his spirit comes back to haunt her from the future. I was, like, so sure that it was some weird connection between the pregnancy and this killer. No. And I was like, what is this crazy movie going to be with this time-traveling aborted baby?
That's a good name
time-traveling
for a good
baby.
Band name. Like, time-traveling aborted baby.
So at the end of the day, yes, obviously, yeah, even though there's ambiguity about who Billy is,
it is not the aborted baby.
I think we can all agree it's probably not the aborted baby. But at the same time, does that make the whole pregnancy thing a little weird?
No.
You don't think it's like a little random?
No, I think it builds in this tension of the movie of exactly yeah. of like, is she gonna survive? Who's gonna kill her? Her boyfriend threatens her.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, what's gonna happen? Is she gonna change her mind? What's yeah. her happy ending? Is there a happy ending for her?
I don't know. It's interesting to me because it leaves the character, like we talked about how the ending is ambiguous, blah 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 blah. It leaves, you know, it sets up this arc for her of, like, what she gonna do with the baby, and then, like, there's no real resolution.
No, I think she aborts it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I think we know.
Unless she just gets murdered by the killer.
Who?
At the end of the movie, he's left alone with the killer.
Oh, unless she gets murdered by the killer. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. Because he was almost aborted, and... I don't know. Okay, so my...
What's your second theory?
My second... This isn't a theory. This was inspired by... This is a pitch I had for a movie that was inspired by my crazy theory about time-traveling right. abortions.
And I haven't heard that.
Yes. So, here's the thing.
I feel like I'd remember.
I don't think you've heard this. And I've had a few different versions of this. I would never probably ever actually make this movie because it has, like, some of the worst politics that I can possibly think of. But... I was like, throughout the movie, I was like, wow, this is really good. They're talking about abortion. I wonder if at the end of it, because it's from a long time ago, it will have like an anti-abortion actual message.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like waiting for that cue to drop. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, if you were going to do like a horror movie that was like pro-life,
mm-hmm.
what if you did like this crazy movie where at like the beginning of the movie, the woman's like, oh, I don't know whether I should abort it or not or whatever, and then she chooses to,
mm-hmm.
and then like because she aborts the baby, like his soul is corrupted and he comes back and like kills everyone around her and like destroy like her selfish choice, quote unquote, destroys everything for everyone else. And like I even thought like he could like raise like an army of the dead
of
that's like
the unborn,
the infinite possibilities that could have come from this child that she got rid of. And then at the end of the movie, she wakes up, it was all a nightmare. She's like, oh, I can't have an abortion. And then she chooses not to have an abortion to keep the child.
And the child turns out to be Satan. I don't know.
This is my crazy...
Interesting.
Crazy if I ever want to help the pro-life movement.
Wow.
But yeah, no, I definitely thought that the whole discussion of abortion...
I know some people who might fund you. They tend to stand outside of Planned Parenthoods with signs.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I guess thought that was a really interesting thing that of connecting the abortion stuff that I'd never really seen in a horror movie before. And if anybody else knows more stuff like this, I'd be interested.
Yeah.
All right, but do we want to talk about any of the other characters, some of the alcoholism stuff going on?
Well, like, there are two characters who are definitely alcoholics.
Yeah.
One, Mrs. Mack, is the house mother, is played more for comedy.
Yeah.
Like, she has a bottle in every room. It's in the B section of the library, in their bookshelf. B for booze, B for Bible, maybe. It was the Bible, I didn't get a look, but... And in the bathroom, in the toilet, and in a shoebox, and in a purse. Like, damn, woman.
Mrs. Mack might be my least favorite aspect of this movie.
You were really
annoying. She was really annoying me. I don't know.
I didn't feel that bothered by her. I was like, oh, she's necessary in a different way.
I mean, I don't, like, hate her, but something about her presence just bothered me.
Right.
I liked the father. I thought he was, like, a fun little character.
Right, good, like, straight man.
Yeah.
But mostly, like, the more interesting one, I'd argue, is Barb.
Yeah.
The sorority sister, played by Margot Kidder.
Who would go on to be Lois Lane in Superman.
Yeah, the Christopher Reeve ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, I honestly thought, like, oh, she'll be redeemed. Like, yeah, she's this unlikable person. She has, you know, she's an alcoholic. She's drunk all the time. But I wasn't 100% sure that she wasn't one of the protagonists until she was like, go to sleep. And then she actually goes upstairs
I think it's kind of sad that they didn't do more, that he just got killed and they didn't do more with her. Because I actually feel like he was not necessarily a likable character, but an interesting character.
Yeah.
And I also thought, you know, we're talking about, you know, the fact that they're talking about abortion and all this and that. But also the fact that they have this sort of gross woman and this sort of, you know, I don't know, just the fact that she is a drunkard, like, you know, like...
She's also, like, overtly sexual.
Yeah.
And she gets punished for that.
Though, I don't think he does, because everybody else gets punished and they're not overtly sexual.
So I mean, that's the thing, so...
And it isn't...
It's this thing where the sexuality isn't a death sentence, otherwise the woman who's pregnant would probably
and we talked about how the first victim...
Is a virgin.
Is potentially... They're making fun of her for being virginal in some capacity, and we don't know if she actually is, but it's... We don't get the tropes of, oh, you're having sex, you're gonna get murdered. We, you know, it's just everybody gets murdered.
Although the other girl, Phyllis... She is having sex with... She has a boyfriend. She gets murdered.
Do we know that she's having sex?
Yeah.
Did I miss that?
Yeah, because Patrick, the guy who plays Santa, he's like, she was supposed to be mine for the 3 days. Like, I've been looking forward to this, you know. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know.
No, I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that that was a statement, but it was like, she is crass.
Yeah.
She is... belligerent. Yeah. She's, you know, talking about all of this. She's not supposed to be liked. And I was like, this isn't a death sentence yet. But then she was killed. And I was like, okay, it's not the reason she was killed.
Well, that's the thing is, I don't think I could say in this, like, in a lot of movies, I would say, oh, they're punished for this and that.
Yeah.
But the fact that the woman who wants to have an abortion survives makes me think that it's just coincidence and that it wasn't punishing anyone, you know?
No.
Because if you're going to punish anyone, you would punish her.
Right. Like, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. And that has become, like, that afterwards kind of becomes a thing.
Yeah.
Of, like, punishing those who
engage
in this behavior for that behavior.
Yeah. You're saying in later films.
Yes, in later films. Yeah. But in this film, it's just kind of a byproduct of life. Mm. And then the byproduct of being in a slasher is dying. That's all.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
I just think it's an interesting movie. You know, it is a little slow-paced in places. It's not, like, the most complex characters in the world. But I think that it's interesting drama. I thought Peter was an interesting character. Mm-hmm. Unlikable, but interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an enjoyable, different film.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. Love the lead detective.
Yeah, really great.
Really good acting from him as well.
Yeah.
Just overall, I would say the performances were satisfactory.
Yeah.
If a little funny, like, easy to, you know, there's something to laugh at in this movie, which is necessary.
And it's always maybe a little bit to laugh at when watching something 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The hair.
Yeah.
Clothes.
Yep. For sure. All right. I mean, that's most of what I want to say. This is going to be a shorter one, guys.
Congratulations. It's your reward for listening to a 2-hour Scream Queens.
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed that. All right. So we've already gotten a few recommendations of things to do in the future. I mean, we probably will at some point still finish Scream 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
I especially want you to see 4. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what you think of it.
I mean, so do I.
Yeah.
We're going to get back to it.
But we got a couple people recommending The Visit, which was the recent M. Night Shyamalan movie. I don't know if we'll do that or not. I've heard good things, but it's not really, I don't think it's for me.
It's not for me either. I mean, I'll be honest. I know what happens.
Oh, you do?
I was spoiled on it.
Yeah.
But mostly because I was like, well, I'm never going to see this. Yeah. And I had friends who saw it. And I was like, tell me about it. I'm never going to see this movie. and I know things about it. And I'm like, okay, this sounds like a good movie for people who like specifically this kind of horror thing. But for me, it just, it is personally not very appealing.
The one that somebody else recommended that I do think I'd like to tackle at some point is It Follows. Do you know It Follows?
Yes. See, this is one that I'd be up for seeing. Yeah.
Very artsy, amazing cinematography. I think you'd enjoy it.
I think I'm, and I know the premise, and I'm fully on board with it.
I enjoyed that movie, and it's also something I definitely need to watch again because there's a lot to unpack, and I did not understand everything that happened in that movie. It's a complicated movie.
Ooh.
And so, yeah, I that will probably happen at some point. If people want to keep throwing out recommendations, we'd love to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we won't necessarily be back every single week. I know we are probably exactly a week after the last Scream Queens one, but we wanted to get out for Christmas. We probably will take a couple weeks off.
And I'm on winter break. Because my finals are done.
Woo!
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thank you guys.
For yes. Dan has one more thing to promote that I'm very happy.
Well, for him we'll see how this goes. I don't necessarily completely want to say I'm doing this, but I'm probably doing a podcast on The 100, the CW sci-fi series. As you know, I'm probably hoping to do a few sort of recapping old episodes leading up into season 3 and then starting with season 3. If you want to start following my Twitter, which doesn't have anything on it yet, there is at the 100 with the numerals 100 podcast. I got that Twitter. And I'll let you guys know when that starts picking up speed. Also, I have my Girl Meets World podcast, The Kids Get Acquainted with the Internet, if you want to check that out. And Olga, I'm still pushing for Olga to watch The 100 and maybe
beyond. Well, so that's the thing. Yeah, I'm planning on starting The 100 within the next week. So I would probably be on the recap episodes with Dan, and then maybe. We'll figure it out. But but if you guys are interested, go ahead and follow him on there, and keep an ear out and an eye out for updates.
Yeah, and just generally, if you want to be involved in the show, you know, like also if you like listen to this episode and you're like, oh, I wanted to say something about Black Christmas, but now they've already done the Black Christmas episode. We can still read your mail in the next episode. If you have anything you want to say about any of the Scream movies
or Scream Queens, because you know we did our finale podcast about that, but we're not.
Yeah, we're not out
doing a fan mail feedback episode. So that'll, you know, if you send it all in, and then we'll read it on the next podcast we do.
And where can they do that?
At
you don't know. So you can either send us a nice short little thought at ScreamPod on Twitter, or you can send us a longer email at thescreamcast.wordpress.com has our contact us thing there. Or you can go thescreamcast@gmail.com.
Right.
Send us an email. And if you want to write us a review on iTunes or send us a nice little rating, that will make my day.
That would be really great, guys, because that's how we get up higher in the rankings of search results, and more people come listen, and we know more people are interested.
And then we can build a nice little screaming community together.
We can hoot and holler. I scream, you scream, we all scream for Scream
Queens.
Do we?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Thank you guys for listening, and have a happy holiday, whether you're celebrating Christmas or
have a Black Whatever. Christmas.
Bye, guys.
Bye.